Hey folks, this week Brandon and TC join me and we talk about Veilid. It is open source, it's peer-to-peer, it's an application framework that's roughly inspired by Tor and some other things to be able to move bits privately from one place to another. And then Veilid Chat, the chat application built on top of it. It's really interesting, you don't want to miss it, so stay tuned. This is Floss Weekly, episode 849, recorded Tuesday, September the 30th. Veilid, be a brick. It's time for Floss Weekly. That's the show about free, libre, and open source software. I'm your host, Jonathan Bennett, and today we're going to talk about Veilid, or is it Veilid? I'm not sure which way that's normally pronounced. I know this is a sort of application routing project that takes some inspiration from the Onion router, this Tor. I know it also has an authentication and identity piece to it. All kinds of interesting stuff we're going to dive into. I can tell you what I think it's about. But I've got the experts. We've got T.C. Johnson, one of the founders of the project, a self-proclaimed hacker with 20 years in the cybersecurity industry. And then we also have Brandon Vandelgrift, who is also a part of the Veilid core team. He describes himself as a full-stack software engineer and over a decade of experience in JavaScript, but we'll forgive him, and other front-end applications. So welcome, TC and Brandon, to the show.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
It's good to have you both here.
And it is Veilid.
Veilid. Yes. All right. I have this thing because I've been running Linux for so long that like everything that ends in a D now, you have to pronounce the D. And so it's almost Veilid in my mind.
I just see. Because of that.
Curse you, System D.
Yeah. I mean it comes from a combination of like Veilid and Valid, like mm-hmm. identification or you know, routing.
Right, right. So what give us the 30,000 foot view. Most of the folks listening to this have never heard of Veilid before. What's the problem space? What are we trying to do with this project?
Sure. So you have to rewind quite a few years. We've been at this now for 3-4 years now. Time pretty kind of blown by. It all started in the brain of one person, Christian Ryu, who's our head developer, head founder, head everything of the project, mm-hmm. Also known in other circles as Dill Dog of the Cult of the Dead Cow. So you might know his greatest hits like BO2K and Veracode and you know things of that nature. So he one day took on the you know mental challenge of trying to solve the problem of distributed networks. Mm-hmm. Looking at decentralization as it was currently being tried, some projects that were already out there doing it, some of the ingredients that were working, some of the applications that were not working. And he came to rest on the spot that he felt like he had an idea that would be a solution to bring fully distributed communication to the masses. From there, he started talking to people that he knew and trusted. You know, is this idea good? Is it, you know, is something I should do? And around that time was when my wife and I, Caitlin, who's also a member now of Cult of Dead Cow, when we all met up and he started, you know, waxing poetically, like, I have this big idea, you know, but I'm not sure if I should really do it. And, you know, I'm not sure if the goods outweigh the bads, you know, things like this, right? Mm-hmm. And so we started just really crunching on it philosophically, you know, whiteboarding it, how would this work and, you know, how do we go about this? How do we make sure that we keep some of the toxicity out of it, like profit motives and corporate takeovers and things of that nature?
I'm not sure that I would call profit to be toxic, but I know what you mean.
Sure. So we, you know, we spent probably a good year or so just noodling on it, you know, and drafting it out and thinking about it. And then we, you know, decided to actually make a run at it and build this thing. Right. So what Veilid is, it's a tool for developers to use. It's a framework to develop on top of. It's a core library written in Rust that enables applications to communicate with each other in a fully distributed, end-to-end encrypted, and authenticated fashion. So if a developer has an idea that they want to build an app that needs to move data between users or from point A to point B, but they're also looking at, what is my backend infrastructure going to be? How big of a cloud footprint do I need? How am I going to make sure the packets are actually coming from where they say they're coming from? How do I make sure that there's privacy in the middle? All these problems that come along with creating a connected ecosystem, we solve all that and offer it to you as a protocol in our library. You can then build your application on top of. And we have an application that we have already published out in beta called Veiled Chat, which is written in Flutter and Dart. It is available for beta testing on both the iOS and Android app stores. It serves both as an exemplar of how to build with Veiled, and is also our flagship application that we're putting out as an entry into the secure messaging field.
Got it. Are all of the applications built on top of Veiled? Are they sort of, do they all talk to each other? Like, do they share one network? Or does every app have its own network?
So well, it can be either.
Exactly. Like, you have the ability to, like, key a network if you wanted to. So you can have, like, your own segmented network if you like. This is how we do, like, a dev network or a staging network to isolate it from the rest of the net. But all applications by default use the same network. So, for example, if you had a very popular application go viral or take off or get a lot of users, all other applications would benefit from more apps on the network because each application is a Veiled node, like in a mesh of nodes. All of the application instances that use Veiled shuffle around traffic for each other, very, you know, think onion routing. But there's no, like, entry or exit node concept. You're just using onion routing to route inside the network to other nodes.
Which we call private and safety routing.
Yes.
Sure.
Lots of pretty diagrams on the website about that.
Yeah. Do you get some of the same advantages that, like, you get over in the Fediverse? So can my identity in Veiled Chat also be my identity in another of these apps? And then say someone makes an app for doing picture sharing. Is there then a way to sort of plug the two things in together?
So Veiled as a framework and a protocol is, you know, distinct from Veiled Chat, which takes those, like, lower level building blocks and creates concepts like identity on top of it, right?
Okay.
So what Veiled, the framework, offers you is private routing, which allows, you know, for secure communication between any two nodes on the network, and secure and private communication. And we also have a distributed hash table for small amounts of ephemeral storage. So storage that's not permanent, but as long as nodes are interested in it or reading from it or opening it, it'll, you know, stay on the network. Otherwise, it will kind of, like, LRU out. Like, least recently used stuff will just fall off the net.
Yeah.
Which, in a way, gives you, like, right to be forgotten, like, on in data that you publish out to the DHT. But, but yeah, it's using the building blocks, like the DHT and private routing, you can make the concept of identity, which is what we've done inside of Veiled Chat, you know, public key, private key pairs, all messages that are between, like, two Veiled Chat identities are actually two DHT records that have each half of the conversation and are reconciled on the application. So right now, Veiled Chat is one-to-one messaging. So there's not, we don't have group chat messaging, for example, but we have the building blocks to build it.
Right.
It's just not something we've gotten to just yet, but yeah, the concept of identity is something that can be built on top of building blocks, and you can build it in different ways. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah, it does. So it sounds like it would even be possible to take one of the existing systems for identity and run it over Veiled. So, like, you could do, activity there's pub a lot. Or Valid.
So one of our exciting visions is that once the project is more widely known and more publicly known, and we get past our version one release next year, we're hoping that some of these bigger projects out there look at us and say, well, wait a minute, we could be using Valid as our transport, as our storage, and as our encryption, and all these things, and we can reduce our costs, our back end costs, so we can incorporate Valid and replace how we're currently doing these things, and make it better, more secure, faster and cheaper.
Yeah, I mean I've seen different projects use different parts of Valid, the framework, for different things, and then they'll use other technologies for other parts. But if they want private and secure communication between two computers on the network, they'll use private routing, which will allow them to essentially send bytes between two machines. And you can either send it without a reply, or you can send it with a reply. So there's app message and app call. App message just sends bytes and doesn't really wait for a response.
It's the equivalent of UDP and TCP.
Exactly, because Valid is built on top of UDP and TCP. So under the hood, right, the protocol runs on UDP TCP, as well as WebSockets. And what that allows us to do is actually be able to run an entire Valid node in your browser. So it can bootstrap, over WebSockets and then just communicate to all other nodes via WebSockets. So the transport, we're actually in the process of adding another transport protocol, which would be Web Transport, which is based on Qwik. But that'll get us into secure contexts in the browser. So we'll be able to run on HTTPS origins. But technically speaking, everything going over the network's already encrypted. It doesn't matter if it's going over unencrypted WebSockets, because we're using Valid's crypto suite, which is a set of off-the-shelf cryptographic algorithms. That means we're, both encrypting and signing and validating all packets going over Valid's protocol.
Yeah. So you mentioned Tor. This almost sounds like just a multi-point VPN. Is it useful to sort of think of it in those terms as well?
It is a network, right? So it is a mesh of nodes that are networked together. As Brandon pointed out earlier, one of the big differentiators between us and a traditional onion route like Tor is that you don't enter, traverse, and then exit. You're only existing inside the network.
So it's Tor, but only the .onion sites.
Yeah, in a sense.
Well,
it's sort of terrifying, but
there's not
sites.
That's applications. The thing. It's not actually. There's no concept of a site that you can visit on the network. Okay. There's not an onion address or a .valid address that you can go to in your browser. It's not a valid browser because there's no entry and exit into, I guess there's no entry into the network from a browser to find, how's a different way to put it?
When you install Valid Chat on your phone, your phone is now an active contributing node on the network. It's part of the network just for that application. That application is the node, right? If you installed another developer's application on the same phone, it would also be a node on the network. If someone was watching the traffic coming out of that phone, Valid traffic by itself is very easy to recognize. But what they can't tell is how many Valid-based applications are being used, what are the Valid-based applications that are being used, because the envelopes are all the same. The traffic is identical. But you're not using it in a sense to get to a hidden site or to obfuscate your source going to a public site. It's not that. It's, It's just building a mesh that these apps, Brandon touched on it earlier. If you have someone that writes a killer app that gets a million users, right? Mm-hmm. And another person that writes an app that's more private and has maybe 1,000 users. Well, that's not 1,000 nodes for one application and 1,000,000 for the other. That's 1,001,000 nodes for the whole thing. They're all talking the same language, the same protocol, the same routing, and they all benefit from each other being on the network.
Yeah, the way to think about it is, we've been saying this at DEF CON and B-Sides when we were there, but it's like, what if the cloud was just everyone's computer? Right? Like, that's basically what you can imagine this like. Like, when you think of a .onion site, there's still that concept of, like, something is hosting a website that you were then, like, going to. You're just going to it, you know, through the Tor network, and not you're not exiting the Tor network. If you're going to a .onion site, you're using the Tor network to reach a server that's then serving you a website, right? And that server's running an HTTP server, right? Like, you know, and so on and so forth. In this case, Valid is just like bytes over, you know, encrypted and privately routed bytes over TCP/IP. That it's not based on HTTP, and it's not serving like web traffic that way. It's like if I want to communicate with TC, I guess this is part of the whole like private routing concept. With Tor, it will like, you know, you'll go through and get shuffled through the network to like reach your destination. But you still know, I guess with that .onion site, there is like a layer of obfuscation there. But let's say I want to communicate directly to TC. He doesn't have to give me his IP address. He doesn't even have to give me his node ID. What he would do is actually create a private route, which is just a selection of nodes that he's aware of that he compiles into a chain of nodes that the packets will route through to him. So it's like a part of a route that's how I would communicate to him. I would send a message to this private route, and it would be encrypted in those layers for each of the different nodes in the chain and sent through to him. But I also need safety on my side. So on my side, when I'm making any communication to the network, I'm not doing so, I'm not doing any operations just as my node ID. I'm actually selecting a set of nodes as a safety route on my end. So I have sender privacy and TC has receiver privacy. And when you connect the two of those together, you get private routing. So all my operations on the network are done through my safety route. And if I wanted to receive any communication from, you know, other nodes, I would publish a private route. And that would be a way for people to send my application bytes in whatever format that application decides to structure it as. It could be JSON, it could be, you know, message pack or Cap'n Proto or whatever you want it to be.
Some of our early iconography was like an eyeball. because when you draw that out, it's got this like oval shape. It looks like an eyeball. So a lot of our early T-shirts had like this mystic kind of symbol on it, you know. And we hadn't explained what it was yet. We were kind of teasing it.
That's funny. Yeah. So is the idea this inherently sort of serverless? I understand the routing is inherently serverless. I'm very curious about this though. Like, could someone set up a server of sorts and put it on Valid? And so
technically, yeah.
You guys did a lot of work to convince me that it's not .onion sites, but you could build
the concept of a .onion site in the sense that you could take a private route and publish it to the DHT and say, hey, this DHT record holds my private routing information, because those routes die and they have to, you know, be updated. We're actually automating the entire process of like publishing private routes to the DHT as a feature in an upcoming release. Mm-hmm. But right now, when a route dies, you just create a new one and update that DHT record with the new private route, and then anyone can, you know, send you bytes through that private route. Mm-hmm. And could I, you know, could I take those bytes coming in and connect it to and pipe it to an HTTP server? Sure. And on the other side, the receipt, you know, the bytes that are sent back from an app call, could that be connected to a browser? And sure.
With enough time and code, right?
Again,
this goes back to our philosophy that we're building this for developers, right? For the creative mindset. Yeah. So, yes, right now we have Debian and RPM packages that you can grab from our repository that will install what we call Valid Server onto an EC2 or, you know, wherever you want to put it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Those are actually very important. Those are our volunteers that are very critical for building the network. Because for the network to work, it does require a selection of nodes that have fully inbound capable connectivity, not behind NAT. But the Valid protocol is built mobile first. So we think first of NAT-based connections. So we're doing UDP hole punching, we're using UPnP, we're using every trick we can think of to get out from behind the NAT so that cell phones on Valid Chat work. We wanted Valid Chat. We want all applications to work on cell phones because that's where people are using the internet today.
Yeah.
So Valid is a protocol that takes care of that. But we use these heavy nodes or headless nodes out there run by volunteers to help bolster that. Now, we also have a Python package, a Python library. So right now, today, that library relies on that Valid server binary running on the same machine you're crafting your Python. And it does the local RPC calls or API calls API calls locally to that machine.
Right.
So you can, you know, write, we have a Python demo that shows how to write like a Python chat application using that local node. Brandon actually has his current project, which is super exciting, is fleshing out more of our other code connectors. So we have the Dart connector right now. The Flutter and Dart connector works, but we don't have like C, C++, Python, Golang, all those kind of things, and Brandon's working on cracking that nut, and he's actually, we don't have it out public yet, but he has shown us that he has his own modification of the Python library that sets up its own node, so you don't have to run that binary in parallel, it does it all for
you. This is like, you know, being able to take a Rust application and compile language bindings for different applications.
Yeah.
So we have the ability right now, and this is how the Valid in the browser works, is we're taking our Rust Valid API and compiling it to WebAssembly. Mm. And that also gives you a JavaScript set of bindings with TypeScript types, letting, you know, web developers and, you know, people can build React apps that use, you know, Valid in the browser. And we want to be able to like meet developers where they are and give people options for, you know, building a secure, private, and like distributed applications, not just like decentralized applications, but like fully distributed applications.
Right. And accessibility is very important to us. And what that means in terms of developer accessibility is not saying, here's our wonderful, you know, world-changing thing we've built. By the way, now you have to learn Rust, right? It's great. If you want to build it in Rust, you can build it natively in Rust. Fantastic. So, please do.
So
but we want to have the options available to say we're also available in your favorite language.
Mm-hmm. So we have WebAssembly. We have Flutter via Dart. And technically, because Flutter is a multi-target language, framework, like you can build applications for web, for mobile, Android, iOS, desktop applications. Because Valid already supports WebAssembly, and also natively you can compile the Rust Valid application for Windows, Mac, Linux, iOS, Android, and WebAssembly, it connects into all those parts of building a Flutter app. So Valid Chat, we've compiled it so it runs in the browser, right? We've compiled it so it runs on Android and iOS. It can compile out to be on a desktop application. So that's one of the reasons I think that we kind of went down that Flutter route was, okay, well, let's make it so Veiled can compile on many different, you know, compile for many different targets. Mm-hmm. And let's plug that into a application framework that compiles to many different targets. But yeah.
That's... And it's been an adventure too. Like the mobile first thing, last year at B-Sides, we launched the beta for Veiled Chat. So we were there working a table, you know, answering questions and things, and we're really excited to show people, like, here it is in my hand, you know, the link will be open in a few days, but here it is, I can show it to you, right? And we were using the B-Sides Wi-Fi that was, you know, provided by some other company or whatever, and it just happened to be using a NAT version, you know, that we had not quite cracked yet, you know, whether that was a port version or a host based or whatever. I don't remember exactly, but I remember us just sitting there scratching our heads like, well, we were just, you know, at our hotel chatting with each other and it was working, and now we come here and it doesn't work. It's a constant, we think we have that all basically squared away now. One caveat we like to make sure people understand is that Veiled requires the internet. Right now, for a Veiled node to talk to other Veiled nodes, it has to have a publicly routable IP address in some way, whether that's behind NAT or just right there on the internet. And we hit this ourselves. We just set up a staging network. We have a big release coming out hopefully in October, very, very soon. Our version 0.5.0, which has some breaking changes to the API and to anyone who's currently developing apps. This is our first time we're releasing. We've released breaking changes before, but this is our first time where we have other developers that are actively doing their own thing with it. So we want to be able to support them through that.
Yeah.
So we've created a staging network, which Brandon talked about keyed networks earlier, right? So we have this network out there. But I put all of the nodes into the same VPC on DigitalOcean. And so they all had the same, they're on the same private subnet. And that caused some funkiness where, like, they were trying to default to that, but we don't support private networks yet. So they weren't able to find each other. So I reached out to Chris, you know, I said, here's the thing that's happening. He looked at the logs. He goes, oh, I know how to fix that. He types the code. He pushes it up to the repo. We put it on a staging network. Now it all works.
Yeah.
So it's still very much a very active beta type of scenario where we're just looking for people to feed back to us what doesn't work, or what's not working for you, or what should be working in a different, better way, and you know, come alongside us and help us make it work for everybody.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned this idea that every node has to hit the internet. It seems like there is a really interesting possibility to allow nodes, and maybe this is what he fixed, but allow a node to connect to the network if all it can see is another node. And I'm kind of coming at that from the perspective of, I know Tor networks, people sometimes get themselves into trouble because the local computer knows what its own IP address is. And there are various ways that it can unintentionally leak that over the network. And so one of the ways that you can fix that with Tor is to sort of put this computer behind a firewall where it can't get out to the internet at all. It can only get out via Tor. It seems like there's an interesting sort of parallel there that could be possible with Veiled.
Well, we have, for example, an entire class of nodes is not inbound capable ever. And that is nodes running in your browser. They can never accept directly accept any kind of connection. They can't open a port, right? So what do? They select an inbound relay. So they select an inbound relay and of one of the nodes that they can see, and then they publish that as their, you know, connection information, and say, if you want to connect to me, come through the relay I've selected, and that relay will forward those packets to that node that's running in your browser. So we have this concept of, like, inbound relaying that helps with that. I know there's a lot of ideas around how we could or may, you know, support like private local networks, but there's an entire set of design considerations that you have to think about for that, around like the different classes of security for different kinds of local networks. Are you on a are you in like a cafe Wi-Fi? Are you on a, you know, is it your own home secure net? Like, how do you In this case, right, like, the internet is the internet. It's all treated the same. But
and LocalNet is something we're going to support in the future.
Yeah.
We have, but today we're still in the make it work mode.
I would assume, so you talk about that, your inbound relay and then sending your routing information out. It's probably a security problem if those are both the same. Like, if your inbound relay and your outbound relay are the same thing.
Well, we don't have outbound relaying in the sense that you're not picking one node to shove all of your traffic through on your outbound. This kind of goes back to safety routes, which can, you know, you can change them. They could stop testing successfully, and it dies, and you create a new one. All this stuff is happening behind the scenes, by the way. Like, app developers aren't managing the, like, liveliness of safety routes or whatever.
That's probably good.
You just say, okay, how would you, you know, here's my routing context. You know, the default uses safety routes, and it's just managed for you. You use that routing context to make read and write from the DHT. You can also subscribe to a DHT record using a watch command. So I can say, okay, I want to watch this record for changes. That actually tells nodes on the network, hey, this node wants to be notified whenever this record is updated. So we'll just send them a message, and you'll get like a value change event come in. So we have private and secure routing, we have ephemeral storage, and then the ability to, like, subscribe to that storage. So you have, like, PubSub.
You have push notifications.
Right? You have some concept of, like, push, you know, notification in a way. These foundational building blocks, when you compose them together, can create many different kinds of applications.
Right.
One of my favorite applications is something that basically recreates what Tailscale does, where, you know, it takes two Veiled nodes and then puts a tunnel interface between them.
Yep.
And it just sends bytes back and forth to create your own private, you know, private mesh network, but using Veiled as transport.
Yeah.
You said a word a minute ago that is very important to us, and to make sure we do hit. So I'm going to segue, if I can, to the idea of security and how we handle security inputs and vulnerability research and things. So Veiled is a nonprofit foundation that stands, you know, on its own, but it is under the umbrella of the Cult of the Dead Cow, which, for anyone who knows that history, knows how involved they were in the establishment of things like responsible disclosure. You look at the history of, like, back office, BO2K, things like that, and you'll see, like, that's a standard for the group. We invite all of that. So anyone who thinks they have found a way to break the protocol, to abuse the protocol, we are an open door for that. We love to hear those things. We've already had two CVEs published. One of the more interesting things we do is if a person comes to us and says, I found a way to break it. The last one I remember was a resource exhaustion bug that someone found. They also supplied to us the proof of concept code on how to do that thing. We have a library in our main code repository of that proof of concept code that people give to us. We don't have a forced update mechanism. We can't make people get the latest core, but we can tell developers that we host the proof of concept codes to, you know, so yes, we fixed it in 0.4.6 or whatever. And you know, you should update, and you should also know that, we're publishing out the public code for that. So really consider updating.
Yeah. It's a difficult balance to strike. Right. I cover this as part of what I do for Hackaday, is cover the security beat. And it's interesting to see how much that, well, just the 90-day rule, the, hey, we found this, we're going to make it public in 90 days, how much that has changed the security landscape in the last decade, two decades. Because, you know, before that, you had times where companies would just sit on big problems, just sit on it indefinitely, forever, just about. And now there's a definite pressure to get things fixed. I think it's pretty obvious to see that we're all better off for it. You know, it's better to let the sunshine in and get things fixed.
It is. And because the core team, the founder team, we all come from security backgrounds. Mm-hmm. That's very near and dear to our hearts. So our initial audience for Veiled was the security community. We first announced it at the main stage at DEF CON. We've made releases at B-Sides. We tour around the country to show people how it works and include them in. And really, we've been focused on the security community because that's our community. Mm-hmm. The nut we're trying to crack is how do we get into the developer community? How do we get to more developer conferences? How do we get this in front of the people that we actually want using this in the beginning
right.
to build secure applications on top of?
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of what my focus is. Like I got started with Veiled after it was publicly announced at DEF CON, and when I saw they had like WebAssembly or TypeScript bindings, I was like, ooh, okay, this is something that I can try today, because I'm a JavaScript, TypeScript, like front end web developer, like that's like my specialty.
Right.
So I built a demo application, but found that the TypeScript types weren't as type safe as they could be, and the ergonomics of the actual API for JavaScript didn't translate well from Rust. So there was a bunch of like hand marshaling that had to be done. So my first contribution was to like rewrite the TypeScript bindings to actually compile from Rust to TypeScript with a lot more type safety, better ergonomics for TypeScript developers. But since then, I've continued that kind of focus on developer experience, expanding access to the library for other languages. Like TC said, I have a working prototype of a Python FFI binding for Veiled. Mm-hmm. So it's not just it's not just sending JSON RPC messages to a running Veiled server process in the background. It's running Veiled in that process via an FFI connection. We're focused on trying to be more accessible for developers, mm-hmm. and we're creating these foundational building blocks that are very open-ended. These are like your very like low-level kinds of APIs. But when you look at what Veiled Chat has done on top of that, created the concept of identity and there's a number of like data structures around the DHT that have been created in Veiled Chat that we plan to like abstract out into a companion library for higher level APIs. Mm-hmm. So like if you want to use Veiled's concept of identity, here, this is a nice packaged up like construct for creating and managing identities on top of Veiled. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be moving in that direction where we're not going to hide our low-level API interface for, creating routes or writing to the DHT and sending bytes between, mm-hmm. bytes between machines. But we want to be able to vend out opinionated sets of libraries and constructs that can actually speed up the process for developers to adopt. I want to be able to make equivalent APIs to what developers already understand. Mm-hmm. Like, here's like something that feels like file system read write, right? Or here's something that feels like HTTP server, or like here's something that feels like where you don't have to manage the low level aspect of it. You kind of package it in a set of APIs that feel familiar. Mm-hmm.
From a philosophical level, if you check out our site, you notice our mascot is a brick. We chose the brick because as a brick, you can come together with other bricks and you can build something really strong. You can mm-hmm. stand up to the forces of nature and the forces that are coming at you. Also, sometimes you can launch each other at things to tear them down if they, you know, maybe they shouldn't exist. As I said in the beginning, we're looking to enable developers to build their dreams, to build the things they want to build without having to worry about how am I going to pay for my backend? How now I've got to introduce, you know, ads to my app so I can have enough revenue coming in to pay for my cloud bill.
Right.
And those ads are maybe breaking privacy where their app is trying to be privacy focused. We're trying to eliminate that. We're trying to eliminate the need to compromise on your values and the things you want to achieve with your creation, because you have to be able to raise the funds, or you have to be able to, you know, bend the knee to venture capital to, you know, make sure you're getting ROI for them. So you're going to sacrifice this one feature that was like really your core that you believed in that you wanted to be able to do. We want to be able to enable developers to build the thing they want without having to, like I said, toxic profit in the beginning, which you said, no, profit's toxic. If they want to charge for their app, they can charge for their app, right?
Sure.
If they want to make some money off of it, that's fine, right?
Yep.
But what we're trying to do is make it in a way where you don't have to sell your users or compromise your users as your revenue stream to build your thing.
And with Veiled, you don't have access to your users' data, right? Like, there's no like centralized database of information that you could mismanage, right? The users own their data. So they own the keys to their, you know, again, when we talk about identity, they own the keys to all of the data that they've either published to the DHT or is stored locally on their device. Part of our local storage has to, we have a protected store, which can use on-device, like secure enclave kind of storage for encryption keys, right? So that's the thing. We want to be able to give developers the freedom to build without the having to worry about, well, what happens? How am I going to keep it going? How am I going to sustain it? How am I going to pay my cloud server costs? You know, those are all real issues that have, like, I think we've seen, like, like a lot of indie developers, sometimes they have to shut down their project because they like made something cool and everyone loves it, but like they can't afford to run it anymore.
They got too popular too fast without a real business plan. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, and you know,
So I'm curious. I want to dig into the DHT a little bit more, and I'm curious whether there's some potential problems lurking here. Sure. So, like, what kind of size are we talking about with the DHT? Like, can we put images in there? Can you put video files in there?
How many? So it's, you can store up to 1 megabyte of bytes, doesn't matter what it is, into a single DHT record. Mm-hmm. And again, DHT records aren't like pinned, they're like ephemeral,
they fall off the end. Yeah,
they can fall off if they're not, if no one like shows interest in them, as in like opening a record to read it or writing to that record.
Is there a maximum number of DHT records on the network?
Well, it all depends on how much storage a node allocates to storing DHT records for the network, right? So you could have, like, again, big, long-running nodes that have large amounts of DHT storage that they're offering to the network as, like, on a volunteer, right, basis. Mm-hmm. But the DHT isn't meant for long-term, like, content-addressable storage in that way, right? Like, big file blobs, for example. Mm-hmm. My demo app actually tries to, like, abuse the DHT in a way where you can take like a 10 megabyte image and chunk it over, you know, 10 records, and shove it into the DHT. But again, it's not guaranteed to still be there. You know, there's not enough interest in it. You know, it's not really what it's made for. But we are on our roadmap. We do have something that we're calling Block Store, which is, you know, block storage. Mm-hmm. And we have a bunch of different thoughts about how we might do this in a fully distributed way. But we've also seen other projects kind of go down different routes about, like, well, how do you incentivize nodes in the network to keep things around? Like, do you go down the cryptocurrency route?
Cryptocurrency. That's exactly what you do.
And that's the thing. Like, but that's the thing. We specifically do not want to introduce cryptocurrency or like an economic force into the network, into Valid as a protocol or Valid as a framework. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean if you want to build your own crypto thing, whatever, on top of it, sure, fine. But like, it's not going to be any kind of first class support or citizen in Valid as a framework.
Right.
You'll hear us say, like, at conferences and stuff, we'll say, no gods, no masters, no coins, no chains. I like to explain this in an example when I'm talking to people at the tables and whatnot, is that if you and I are both on Valid chat and we want to talk to each other, we have a way to do that contact exchange. Mm-hmm. But once that contact exchange is made, it grants us both access to the records that have been published out. So our node, like my node, right, where I start a chat with you, my node has that record. Mm-hmm. And my node will always have that record. It won't expire off of mine because I'm the originator of it.
Okay.
Now, the nodes I put it out on for you to be able to reach, they're going to hold on to it for, I think it's 12 hours right now. If there's no changes over 12 hours, then it drops off of their cache. But as long as you and I are chatting, those records are being updated in the middle, and those records will stay alive, and they'll stay where they are. If we don't talk for a week, those remote records fall apart. But you and I, our nodes, still have that record locally. It doesn't disappear altogether. The people that it matters to, it's still on their devices. Mm-hmm. So if I reach out to you and say, hey, haven't heard from you in a while, how you doing, right? It's going to republish that record, and because you subscribed to it, you're going to get the notification that it's been updated. It might be on totally different caching nodes at that point. But because it's using the hash to find it and not an IP address or a specific route, your node still has the ingredients to find, excuse my cat, please, has the ingredients to find that record and, you know, and rejoin the chat, as it were.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the concept of like rehydrating a record. Mm-hmm. So again, some of these things you don't necessarily have to like worry about as an application developer. But when your node comes back online, you know, if you've gone and like published a bunch of DHT records, you'll have a local copy of that record stored, that when you go back online, and you try to open or modify that record, it'll republish that record, to the network if it's followed off.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. One of the things some, you know, projects that are sort of in the same space, I think of Bitcoin, they're having a problem right now where people are putting spam on the blockchain.
Yep.
And I'm curious, is that something you've thought about? You know, is Valid going to make it? And this is the measure of whether a project has made it, you know, when people start using it for spam. Is Valid going to make it to the point to where people start putting spam, or, you know, even worse, like CSAM, child sexual abuse material, into that DHT? I would hope that you've at least thought through this question.
the cool thing about being like security as our foundation for this entire protocol and framework is that we think about every new feature from an adversarial standpoint. There's no, like, you can't trust other Valid nodes to actually behave properly. You know, in some distributed systems, in some even algorithms for doing operations across a distributed network, some of them actually rely on a foundational like assumption of trust.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot rely on trust as a foundation. So in that sense, we've designed it so that if nodes are behaving in unexpected ways, they're sending garbage packets or things that their signatures don't match their actual data, we have a punishment mechanism that automatically takes place where we identify kinds of traffic that are trying to disrupt or garbage traffic, and your node can just like put them in timeout for an hour. So we have like a punishment mechanism. The other aspect...
What Brandon's describing is a technical measure to make sure people aren't trying to do bad technical things in the network. Your question was more about like the philosophical content, what people are doing.
Right.
So part of our design is there is no central authority on Valid. If we disappear, if our GitLab goes offline, if we shut down our few nodes that we're using, it doesn't stop the project. The project still exists. The network still exists. All the nodes still communicate. There's no way for us to shut down. Also, if law enforcement comes to us with subpoenas looking for user data, for databases, for things of that nature, we have nothing to give them. We don't have anything in the middle that we're essentially managing. That being said, we like to view ourselves as good people. We like to view ourselves as someone who's not intentionally out there trying to make the world a worse, terrible place.
Right.
One of the things I love to brag about my wife is before I met her, she was running a nonprofit that was aiding victims of non-consensual pornography and abuse images and things of that nature. And part of what she got into doing was at her local state level, she was helping the state investigators find pseudonymous people online. They're using Discord, using shadow sites. And she's actually helped put away child pornographers by helping police understand the technology and understand what's going on. So even though we can't aid law enforcement by giving them stuff, by handing over logs and data and records, we are completely open to talking to them, to saying, here's how our network works. Mm-hmm. Here's how it fits into like traditional law enforcement investigation like practices, because we want the bad people to get caught. But we also don't want to sacrifice the good people's privacy and security as a mechanism just in the name of catching the bad people.
Right. Yeah, that's so important. That's something, you know, so one of my other hats is working on the Meshtastic project and network. And that's something that we've had to deal with as well. So like we got interviewed by Wired, right? And so they did a, it didn't make the print magazine, but on their website, they had a piece on Meshtastic. And, you know, it was like an hour long interview and everything was great until they got to the very end. And they're like, by the way, we talked to an investigator that says that Meshtastic is being used for, you know, human trafficking out of Mexico. And we're like, first off, we knew that it was coming. But, you know, our answer was, you know, we're in the same place that Signal is, and there's not a whole lot we can do about it. But
right, and also so is TCP and UDP
yeah.
and everything else that makes the internet, right?
Yeah.
All we can do is try to not stonewall and enable mm-hmm. the bad actors. We want to make sure that we're doing what we can to help and keep our network in the clear.
Now, I will point out that we went and looked into the story that they were talking about, and they exaggerated what was going on quite a bit. But
hey, on Meshtastic, we have a dream for post general release where we want to develop hardware based Valid nodes, whether that's using LoRa or whether it's using Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. All that's kind of wide open.
Yeah.
But we dream of a day where you can create a localized, highly localized, internet independent.
Yeah.
Node of so your Valid chat app would know that it's connected to a local node. It's using that mesh now. Mm-hmm. So in times of, you know, power outages or natural disasters or, you know, civil unrest or whatever it is, that Valid can be used as a mechanism to communicate, even mm-hmm. if the internet is unavailable or untrustworthy.
I mean, even for like in the short term, you could even use Valid's transport as your backhaul, mm-hmm. like MQTT is right now for Meshtastic. There's some idea kind of that we've been thinking about of, you know, how can we make that aspect more secure and private
mm-hmm. and more fun stuff too. Like I've had conversations with a guy that is part of a LARPing community that goes out into very remote sections of the woods. And they have an app that they use to like do things like log damage and stats and things like that. So they're looking for a way to build a mesh system out in the woods, like strapped to trees and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they're looking at Valid as a mechanism to do that.
Yeah, Meshtastic would be a great solution for that too.
Yeah.
You know, this is something to dive into further, probably in a different conversation. I don't think we want to hash all of this out right now on the show, but you know. routing one over the other, or maybe making a mapping between the two, is definitely something that is very interesting to do, to make those two talk with each other and cooperate.
Yeah, we love those conversations. Yeah. I was kind of hoping Randall would be on this episode, because I listened to that last one with him. I'd love to have that Flutter Dart nerd out session with someone who's deeply involved with that project to see what we're doing, because I think what we're doing with Vela Chat is probably one of the most significant Flutter projects out there. So I'd love to, you know, get that in front of the eyeballs of people who manage Flutter, so they can help solve problems.
When you guys have your next big release, hit me up and I'll make sure and get Randall on the show for that one. Okay, we can definitely do that. All right, let's see, which direction did I want to go to? Oh, so let's talk about Vela Chat real briefly. We're getting close to out of time. Something I'm curious about in Vela Chat is, how does the identity piece work? Like, so how do you bootstrap identity, right? If you start from nothing, how do you get somewhere with identity?
So right now, you have like an out of band invitation kind of connection. Okay. So
go back before that.
I know. Well, you create your identity. You know, you can create a public key private key pair, right? You can publish your identity information to a DHT record and sign that record. You can essentially, if I wanted to connect to TC, what I would do is by creating an invitation. This invitation would be one half of the invite, where I'm sending it to TC in like an open state, where when he goes and reads that DHT record, he can then like accept it from the other side. And I'm trying to remember if it's a DHT record that acts like an inbox.
So let's take a step back real quick.
Yeah.
So when you first install Vela Chat, the very first thing you're going to see, well, the first thing is a big banner saying this is beta and things don't work and it's slow and everything. But once you get past that, it's going to ask you some basic information. What name do you want to go by? Mm-hmm. Pronouns? How do you want to do your away messages? There's a profile that you build, right? And that information is stored in a DHT record like everything else is. So that when I build the invitation to share, and I don't want to go into deep about that because that's having a drastic change in the upcoming release. But essentially, it's in the form of like a QR code or a copy-pastable invite you can send out through other means. So if we're sitting next to each other, I just show you the QR code. You can scan it with your Vela Chat, and that gives your node the primitives that it needs to go out and find that DHT record that has my identity information, and then fills in like my name and, you know, those things on your side. It also grants you access to the record that's going to be our chat, and allows you to add your signing and encryption information to it, so that my side now knows how to encrypt data and verify data that we're sharing back and forth to each other.
These are one-time invites right now, but TC said we're changing that.
It was a lot of fun. Like I said, a little over a year ago, we opened the beta, and one of the common things we saw was people would make an invite, and instead of sharing it with a person, our community is on Discord right now. So they would just paste that QR code up in Discord and say, "Someone connect to me," and that created this race condition that we didn't anticipate. We're like 50 people were all scanning that QR code, right? And it just causes some churn. So we're changing that up now to where now when you create your profile, you create your identity, you create an invite, which is still QR code based, and you can put that anywhere you want. Right? You can put it as your profile picture and a business card, doesn't matter, right? And 1,000 people can scan that. Doesn't mean they get access to you. They don't pop up in your contact list. They can't communicate with you. And a very important feature in Vela Chat is there's no way for people to spam you. There's no way for people to brute force the user list to send unsolicited messages to people they haven't contacted with. So you scan my QR code, right? It's kind of in limbo at that point. I have to then scan your contact QR code, like a two-way handshake, and then the communication bridge is established, and then we can talk to each other.
Yep.
Is there a mechanism to prevent two people from claiming the same name? So, like, our username's unique?
That's the thing. There is no... one of the things that TC, didn't name in the things you fill out in your profile, first of all, there's no email address. Like, we're not collected, you don't need an email address to have an account. You can pick any name you want because names are not in a global namespace.
Okay.
It's just data in a DHT record. So, and anyone can create a DHT record, and you get a new record ID. But yeah, right. That's the thing. Right now, there's no like global list of users. Mm-hmm. There's something that we will be working on for like creating like discovery mechanisms for Veiled. That's another feature development milestone, but that's not included in this.
Because sometimes maybe you do want people that you don't know to be able to reach out to you.
Oh, and that's where the idea of, you know, two-directional you scan mine, I scan yours connection comes in. But also, you know, you might want to have some kind of inbox where maybe you can look through to see if anyone's trying to contact you that you might know. But
yeah, those things
that
are on
starts to open
too.
Up
yeah.
that again. That starts to open up like spam doors, and it's like
yeah,
you have to figure out a way to.
There's that, and that. There's a like group. We don't have group messaging right now, but that's also on the roadmap.
Yep.
Image sharing isn't there yet because we don't have block store yet, so that's on the roadmap. Right now, Veiled Chat is just a one-to-one, person-to-person chat. Yep. And the way you're getting connected is you know each other through some other, you know, mechanism, right? Yep. So I'm only connecting to you because you gave me the contact.
Yeah, interesting. Yep. Very cool. So is the public key kind of the unique identifier on the network?
I mean,
or does
it's... Are you talking about your node ID, or are you talking about your identity, or?
I guess I don't know enough to know which one I'm asking about. Like, is there a unique identifier even on Veiled Chat, or is it all based around these routes?
Yes. So your identity has a key pair, right? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But also your node has a key pair. So like your node is not you.
Okay.
Yep.
And even abstracted beyond that is. Your node ID is not in the record using for the chat. That record has its own ID. So everything is discovered through what we call like a fan out process that's seeking hashes by distance.
And that's the DHT.
It's taking
mechanism.
My routing table. I know I'm looking for a record of a certain hash. Mm. So I look in my known nodes record table and I find some nodes that are close in hash distance. Talks to those, says, hey, do you have this record or do you know where I can find it? And they'll either say, yes, I have that record, or they'll say, no, but I know another node is closer in hash space, and you'll kind of just keep doing that fan out until you land on
it's,
the node.
It's
that has
it's actually an iterative fan out. It's not a recursive fan out.
Right.
Like some other, you know, DHT algorithms. Because again, thinking adversarially, we don't want one message to turn into two, to turn to four, to turn to eight. Like we, you know, there's specific kinds of constraints that we're building into how the underlying protocol works to make it so that, you know, we're difficult to like perform a Sybil attack against. We have a couple of new ideas around there to continue to harden that further.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is the underlying network here? Is it similar to Tor in that there's a percentage threshold that like if 50% of the nodes are malicious, then the whole thing falls apart?
I love that question because it falls back to the fact that every application written on Veiled is a node on the network.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way, the only way to do that is to write a malicious app that becomes the most popular app on the network.
Or have the budget of a government and spin up a billion EC2 instances.
Yeah, but we are, but that's the thing too. We're making it we have an idea around being able to make node IDs, which is essentially a hash of public key and other things, to make node IDs difficult to generate, or like, you know, adding a kind of difficulty that's actually tied to a scarce resource such as like IP addresses. You know, and add, you know, mixing in some difficult to source bits into your actual node ID, and you know, this is all the brainchild of Christian. He's got a number of different considerations and a draft RFC that he started to put together for you know, ways to increase the difficulty and make it very expensive. to like generate a lot of, you know, a lot of nodes to flood the network. If anyone listening is interested in that idea at all, come join us at veil.com/discord. Join our Discord. There's a cryptography channel where he's posted the draft, and we'd love anyone to comment on it and tell us what you think, poke holes in it.
Be a brick.
Be a brick.
I'm immediately reminded of I think the project is called Anubis, and yeah, that's the Cat Girls, right? And what's his name? Security researcher over at Google that wrote about it. I can't come up with it. Anyway, he got annoyed that he was getting blocked from being able to get to the Linux kernel mailing list. And he did the research and actually ran the math on Anubis. Because what it does is it makes you hash. It does hashes in your browser. Mm-hmm. But the way it's done...
I remember this.
Yes. The way it's done is not correct. And so he goes, you could basically get into everything that Anubis protects for about $1,000 of EC2 credits. It was quite funny. Tavis Ormandy. That's it. This was about a month ago, and he actually did the math. He goes, this does not make sense at all.
Hilarious. And Travis is a smart dude. We'd love to have Travis notice us and, you know, come along and start applying that brain of his to see, you know, what problems have we not anticipated, or which ones did we anticipate but we didn't fix quite right. Right.
Yeah. And this is a community project. Like, we're, you know, we'd love people to get involved, poke holes in things, suggest new ideas. And I think a lot of this also does come from people asking questions. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we kind of even started down some of this route because people were, you know, kind of trying to understand more about Veilid and asking questions and hypotheticals of like what ifs. And it's like, oh, maybe we could do more here to, you know, increase difficulty. So.
Yeah, something I've discovered is that the earlier someone comes and points out that your math doesn't make any sense, the easier it is to fix it.
Yeah, part of our pre 1.0 release is to get a third party cryptographic analysis, as well as a third party code review security type of analysis.
Like an audit.
So those things are our gates that we want to get through before we say, you know, this is 1.0 production ready.
Right. Yeah. So I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, where's the funding coming from for this? Like, are you guys making money on this somehow?
Who's the puppet master pulling the strings? Right?
Do you guys get to work on it full time? And how are you paying your rent?
All right. So, again, this all started years ago with, me, Chris, and Caitlin. Mm-hmm. We didn't quit our day jobs, right? We also had day jobs. We all, some of our families we deal with. Veilid is our passion project. It's our after-hours project.
Right.
We don't make a dime off of Veilid. Our food comes from our paychecks, from our normal employers. While we are a nonprofit that accepts donations, those donations go to our operating costs, which are things like our DigitalOcean stuff, our secret storage, things we do to enable the project to happen, right?
Yeah.
But Veilid itself is not generating any kind of revenue that we then are turning into a paycheck or anything like that.
Do you see a future where you might? Like, is there some way that would make sense for you guys to make money off of it?
It would never be a way that's like an investment type of thing. Like, if someone wanted to show up and, you know, they wanted a $30 million tax credit, so they wrote us a check for donation, you know, we'd gladly accept it. But no, we definitely, one of the important philosophical things we want to do was we didn't want Veilid's failure to mean we became destitute and that become a negative influence for us to do things in a way we didn't think were right. We'd rather build it slow, and we'd rather build it on a hairstring budget than build it wrong.
Yeah, understood. All right, we've covered a lot. I've got a couple of questions that I'm required to ask of each of you. I have a feeling I know what some of the answers are. But let's start with TC. What's your favorite text editor and scripting language?
So I'm a Vim user, but if I'm stuck in a GUI, I might go over to VS Code or something. The scripting language, I exist between Bash and Python. That's basically all I do. I'll say I am not a developer. I'm someone who came up like in hacking through cybersecurity, like through the military and things like that. So I can write some Python. If you see anything in our repositories about our building infrastructure, our CI/CD, things like that, I probably wrote that code. That's gonna be all Python and Bash.
All right, and to Brandon.
I came from Sublime Text to like Atom Editor to now like VS Code. Obviously, is like the go-to. You can write JavaScript that does a lot of things. It can run on many different platforms and places. but it really depends what I'm doing. But yeah. Full stack JavaScript is a thing.
Yes, it is.
So,
is your preference JavaScript or TypeScript?
TypeScript.
Okay.
Definitely. It's changed the game in terms of what you can expect to happen and that kind of safety and reliability. I'd rather have errors at build time than runtime.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. All right. There's a bunch of questions we didn't get to, and I know you guys have some big changes coming up. I mentioned it during the show, but be sure and reach out to me, and we'll get you guys back on when that next big release happens. We'll see if we can't get Randall on the show with you. I think that'd be a lot of fun. But I appreciate you.
Valen Chat will be a big part of that release, so he'd be a great person to have along.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you both being here. It's been a lot of fun. The hour just absolutely flew by.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks again. Thanks so much. All right. That was TC Johnson and Brandon Vandergrift talking about Valid and Valid Chat, a very neat application and framework. It's got some Onion Router vibes. It's got some VPN vibes. It's got the chat piece. Lots of good stuff, and we'll definitely make sure and have them back. We don't yet have a guest scheduled for next week, so if you have a project and you want to be on the show, or you know of someone that should be, let us know. You can reach out. It's floss@hackaday.com. And then the week after that, we're talking with James Cole about Firefly 3, a really interesting looking, I believe this is the financial program to be able to track where your money goes, and some really neat stuff there. If you want to find more of me, there is, of course, Hackaday, hackaday.com. You can find my security article. If this kind of propeller beanie stuff is down your aisle, then you'll like that. And that goes live Friday mornings. And then there's also the Untitled Linux Show over at twit.tv/ULS, and we'd love to see you there. Appreciate everybody that gets us, those that watch and listen live and on the download, and we will see you next week on Floss Weekly.